Yo, thank you so much for checking out another episode of EC Convos, the place to have cool conversations with cool people. Of course, I am Eric, your host, and I truly appreciate you being here. Please do me a solid, y'all, and just continue to leave comments and subscribe to the show. We're on YouTube, we're on Amazon, Spotify, you know, all the cool places to go to, Apple Podcasts. And I'm also back on Substack, as I said last week, at ecconvos.substack.com. Y'all, every little bit counts. So please, if you are feeling generous, leave a tip as well by clicking the link below in the show notes. Every little bit counts, and I truly appreciate it. So, I have a riddle for you. Name one thing people love, people think it's evil, some people with it never talk about it, and some people without it always talk about it. Give up? You guessed it, money. In my opinion, it's the single most important topic of any relationship, a marriage, or a partnership. I feel so strongly about it, y'all, and I actually asked my trusty friend Gemini about it, and she said approximately 70% of couples argue about money, and 57% of divorced couples say financial disagreements are the reason why they separated. That is crazy. And I'll be transparent for a moment and say that there was a time when my finances weren't really right. I still had the spend, spend, spend mindset and not a save, save, spend mindset. Now, I won't get into the details as to what happened because there were some underlying issues and situations that occurred. But let's just say I was robbing Peter to pay Paul. And if you know, you know. It was a crazy time, y'all. But at some point, I had to say enough. I had to put a stop to it somehow. And it felt so overwhelming because I had this mountain of debt and no way to climb it. But then I wrote something down and I kept it in my wallet to remind me that eventually it'll get better. And it's a phrase. The best way to eat an elephant is piece by piece. And that's why I love having people like David Weinberg on my show to talk finances, because y'all, this is now the time to get it in order. It's so important to talk about what's coming in, what's going out, and how to balance the two to become prosperous, because it's never too late to start. This is a very, very important conversation that I had with David because he knows money very well. And he's the founder of Weinberg Financial Solutions. And he sets the record straight on quite a few things, actually, like the debt snowball, what it's about, why healthy debt is kind of a controversial topic, and how he was able to get himself out of debt in months. And guess what? You can too. No matter how much or how long it takes, discipline is the single most important thing you will need to reach that goal. But don't take my word for it. Sit back and enjoy this financially responsible conversation with David Weinberg.
Why I wanted to bring you on because when you reached out to me, or whenever I sent the message out and you reached out to me, I got to do a little research on you and I said, "Oh, finances, let's talk," you know,
yes,
because believe it or not, there's so many people out here that are very financially strained right now, considering how the economy is now, considering how the job market is now. And, you know, it's very, very, very important to have conversations about money. A lot of people don't want to, you know, because one, they don't want to face the reality of, you know, of not being able to have the resources or the financial mm-hmm. backing that they need in order to be able to, you know, live a well life. Or two, they don't even know themselves, you know, how much in the hole they are, because, you know,
right.
things happen, as we said earlier, you know, we just kind of go through life just by the seat of our pants, and nobody wants to ever sit down and have the real conversation about, okay, what will it take for me to be able to get out of the hole I'm in now. So that's why I'm glad that you're here now so we could talk about finances. So thank you. Thank you again for joining EC Convos. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah. So tell the people about who you are and what you do.
Yeah. So my name is David Wongberg, and I am a financial coach. So essentially what I do is I help people understanding where their money goes, help them pay off debts, and I help them budget, whether they're new to budgeting or making their budget better. I don't handle any portfolios or really tell them what to invest in, because that's more of a financial advisor role, and that's more licensed. Mm-hmm. A financial coach is someone who is more unregulated and can give them the advice they need to maybe take a direction that is best suited for them. Now, obviously, I am someone who will give my advice. I don't direct them to go, you need to do this, you need to do that. I just give them suggestions, and then I let them make the decisions for themselves. And so far, like, a lot of that is really great to talk to people from all walks of life. I've talked to people who are younger than I am. I've talked to people who are older than I am. I've talked to people my age. And so it's really interesting to hear this and to see what's come of this since I started back in May of last year. This started when I got out of debt. So long story a little bit, when I first started to realize how much debt I had was when I went through a breakup, like a really bad breakup, lost a job all in the same month. And then I looked at my finances and saw I only had about maybe $300 to my name, not including anything in retirement, but just only about $300 in the bank that I could access. And I just went, I can't afford to live in this place I'm in. I can't afford to really do much. So what can I do? Got a room to rent, really cheap room. Thankful for the landlord that let me live there, and then just paid it off. And it took a while to pay off because I was focused, but I wasn't as intense on it as I should have been, now that I look back on it.
Right.
But at the same time, it's like, I think that was back in 2016 when that started. 2019, I got engaged to my now wife, and we actually were cash flowing our wedding. So we cash flowed that. And then 2020 happened, and COVID shut everything down. So that allowed us to save up a lot of money, a lot more than we had ever seen in our lives, like actually held on to in our lives, I should say. Cash flowed our wedding. And then I was already debt free. She had some debt. 2 weeks into our marriage, I had to get a new car because mine just completely snapped.
Wow.
And wow. And it was more like a emotional decision where I was just like, I hate this car. I want to get rid of this car and I want to get a new car. And so I did. And this was during the chip crisis. And so this was like, okay, new cars and used cars are the same prices. So
right.
I'll just get a new car because why not? And it ended up costing me a lot. So when we actually sat down and looked at how much we had about 43 grand in debt. And then it took us both together as a team 7 months to pay that off. And since then, we have not taken out any loan. We have not taken out any, we don't use credit cards. Everything that we use is just cash. And that's what I want to teach people, is just how to use the cash that they make. Because a lot of people make good money, they just don't know where it goes.
Wow. You know, what's fascinating about that is you made it back in, you know, whenever you went through the process of everything, like with the breakup and everything, you, instead of just kind of sitting back and saying, you know what, okay, I'm just going to be depressed, I'm just going to figure it out, you actually pulled yourself out of bootstraps and said, no, let me figure out a plan. Because you're right. Mm-hmm. Nobody really wants to be in debt. You know what I mean? Understandably so, you know, there are things that happen, as you said, when you had to get another car, you know, that places you in those positions where you have to accumulate some level of debt or whatever, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to forever be in debt. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, well, first of all, congratulations on your marriage. Number one.
Thank
with
you.
That. And then whenever you were able to kind of go through everything during COVID, during that time, you know, a lot of people were able to save money, you know, because everything was shut down. So we didn't really have a lot of resources or a lot of things that people typically would spend money on. It wasn't really available, like the restaurants, going, you know, electronics, stuff like that or whatever. And it did take a pause. A lot of times, a lot of people did stop for a minute and pause and say, you know what, hold on, what am I spending? We did the exact same thing during when the pandemic happened. We actually, it's funny because when the pandemic happened, we were actually in the process of buying a house. And so we were like, okay, this is right before the pandemic started. Maybe around March is when we actually, or around February is when we made the consideration to get one. And we was like, okay, in order for us to get a house, what do we have to do? Let's go ahead and get it started or whatever. And luckily, thank goodness, we were able to get a house with a really good interest rate. And get the house, because now that has gotten so much more expensive, you know? So I'm just so fascinated by how you were able to get rid of $43,000, you know, and are you able to kind of talk about some of the steps that you like, kind of go more into detail about the steps that you actually went through to hit that threshold?
Yeah, absolutely. So like I said, or like I hinted at, we had so much money saved over from the wedding, and a lot of it was also from gifts that people gave us. So people would, you know, contribute checks or cash. And so, you know, we had a good chunk of money left over, and a lot of that went toward my down payment for the car that I got. But then it took a lot of just discussion and just being able to let go. And that was a thing that my wife is at the time, and I think she still has the same feelings now, but it's really hard for her to make a huge payment towards something. Doesn't matter if it's something that she wants, or doesn't matter if it's something that we actually need to get rid of. And a lot of that has to go with just having a long form discussion and just saying, you know, we can do this because we have that money right now.
Yeah.
Initially, and I'm sure she's okay with me saying this, but initially she had this plan because COVID had everything on pause. There was no interest being collected on student loans. Mm-hmm. There was no payments due for student loans. So she had this plan of like, I'll just pay $2,000 here and $2,000 here and have it go for like 4 months, because then in 4 months it'll be gone, which is real. Like, she actually was able to math that out correctly. But then I looked at her and I went, we're both working stable jobs. There's no signs of layoffs. There's no signs of anything that's going to happen. We have more than enough saved up for that amount that you have to owe. Let's just pay it off now. And it took a little bit of back and forth. And then she finally came to an agreement of like, okay, I'll pay it off. And I can see where she's coming from, like the pain of paying off that much. And seeing that much in your bank account and then it's just gone.
Yeah.
But that's also how it is when it comes to debt. And when it comes to getting rid of the debt, you want to make sure that you do it as fast as possible. So that way you can get back on track and accumulate all that money that you had to get rid of, but then accumulate more than what you got rid of. You know, you can actually save up a lot more. Once everything is clear, you can save up much more than you thought. And, you know, we cleared that up. So then we snowballed all of her payments that were from the student loans into my car. And rather than just making the monthly payment on the car, it was, you know, I would make one payment and then make more to the principal and just keep going and going and going. And then eventually it was just gone. And so it came with a lot of overtime. You know, we both had to work, or at least I had to work a lot of overtime. It came with a lot of selling stuff, and it came with just a lot of making sure that we both understood where we wanted to go and what we had to sacrifice to get there too.
Right. Right. The one thing I keep hearing whenever we're talking about this, the one thing I keep hearing from you is discipline. You had a significant mm-hmm. level of discipline with this, because a lot of times people they'll see it, you know, initially, you know, they'll be motivated to do it and everything like that. They'll be inspired by someone else who's doing it. And then several months down the line or whatever, they may see that, or they may feel that, okay, nothing is being done. And that's where the discipline needs to come into play, and it needs to continue on and carry on. And something else you mentioned too, I went to your website and I saw something about the, you are a master financial coach with Ramsey Solutions, with Dave Ramsey. Mm-hmm. I am a big fan of Dave Ramsey and his snowball method, because you mentioned that a few seconds ago. So for the people who don't know really about the snowball effect, can you give them a little bit more insight on that?
Absolutely. And just full disclosure, I'm not employed by Ramsey Solutions. I am just on my own, but I was certified and trained by Ramsey, just so if anyone's confused if I actually work for Ramsey, I don't.
Right.
I'd love to eventually, but I, you know, we'll see if that actually happens. But so the snowball method, and I can kind of describe the baby steps as well, what Dave teaches. So the snowball method is you essentially want to take your debts smallest to largest in terms of balance, not in terms of interest rate or anything else, but it's just in terms of balance, and then pay them off one by one as aggressively as you can, starting with the smallest one. So say you have a small $500 credit card balance, and then you have another $1,000 credit card balance. You want to make sure that you pay off the smallest one first as fast as you can, while paying the minimum on that $1,000 credit card, and then paying whatever minimums you have for other debts, whether it's student loans or cars or HELOCs or anything like that. And then once the first one's paid off, you take the payment from that first one and then roll it over into the next one and then roll it over into the next one. You keep doing that while you stop all contributions to your investing and you stop saving for anything else. You want to make sure that you have at least $1,000 saved up for an emergency fund, which a lot of people will dispute and say that's not enough to save up. And I get it. It's not a long-term emergency fund. It's a short-term emergency fund. If you have $1,000 saved up right now, you're probably doing better than 56% of Americans. So, you know, you want to make sure that you have that saved up for just for any kind of emergencies and then just pay off everything else aggressively as fast as you can. And that comes from working overtime, saving, selling stuff, and just doing what you can to, you know, get all that debt paid off. And then you go into saving up for 3 to 6 months of emergencies. And then you start investing. Then you start, you know, contributing towards your kids' college if you have kids, and then paying off your house early as well. So there's a lot to think about when it comes to not just paying off debt, but then saving for the future. And then also being able to give generously, because the money that you make, it's great to have, it's great to spend, and it's great to save. But ultimately, it comes down to how much can you give as well? How much are you able to give to your church? How much are you able to give to those in need? How much are you able to give to, you know, someone that is struggling? It's a blessing to be able to make so much money, but then also to be able to give so much money away while you are still working on investing for yourself too.
I love everything about the principles that Dave Ramsey talks about with the snowball effect. And I also love with what you're saying too, is the idea of being able to give, because you're right. I mean, a lot of it has to do with if you have the ability to give, then give, you know, especially if it's something of financial capabilities, you can definitely give, and you have enough money to be able to do that once you build the discipline. So let me give you an example and tell me what your thoughts are on this. So using the snowball method. So let's just say I have a card that's $500. I have another card that's $7,000. I have another card that's $10,000. So according to the snowball method, the best way to do it would be, let's just say, okay, put the $7,000 and the $10,000 on minimum payments. Do your monthly minimum payments to keep it in good standing. With the $500 one, you want to aggressively attack that one. So let's just say let's say the minimum on the $500 is $50, but you want to do $100, right? And then, you know, until you can pay it completely off in a few months. After that, do you still use that same $100, or do you go with when you're attacking the $700 one? Do you still do that same $100, or do you try to go up a little bit more with that amount, because now you no longer have the $500 card to pay for?
Yeah. So you don't have the $500 card to pay for, but now you can take that $100 that you're using for that $500 card and then apply that to the $7,000 card now.
Okay.
And you may be able to actually apply more, again, depending on how much you are making, how much you are able to put into it. Now, obviously, you want to make sure that you are budgeting for yourself and making sure that you have your four walls covered, whether it's food, utilities, your transportation, so like car insurance and gas, and then also your housing, whether that's renting or mortgage. And so you want to make sure those four walls are covered. And then once you have all the minimums on those, and I know utilities and gas can fluctuate month to month, and that's totally understandable to maybe budget a little bit more for utilities or budget a little bit more for gas or food even, and just kind of pay more towards that $7,000 card. So you take the minimum that you're paying on the $7,000 card and then add on $100, or if you can add on more to that too.
Okay. So it's just more or less an accumulation of everything that you have. So like, let's just say if you can do $200 on a $7,000 card, and then when you finally attack the $10,000 card, you can do $200, or, you know, versus the, you know, starting, you can do the $200 on that $10,000 card and then whatever the minimum payment is or whatever. And then you just build it up that way and continue to build momentum.
Yeah. Right? Okay. Yeah. And usually during that time as well, like, things can happen. Life can happen. You can get a promotion and you can pay off more. You can go and see that, oh, I may not need these things that I have in my house, but I haven't used them in 7 years or however long it's been. And I can sell them on eBay and actually get a decent amount of money for it. And then take that money and apply it toward the debt too. And just keep, you know, Now, obviously, I don't want everyone to live the bare minimum and have like lawn chairs, unless that's what they want to choose. I've heard stories of people just like getting rid of all their furniture and just using lawn chairs. And right. I applaud them for doing that, because that's just an insane way to live. But they did it and it was temporary. And now they're on a path that is better for them. But just think of ways that you can spend more toward your debt, but then also earn more to pay off that debt faster.
Yeah. So even if it's something like you say, selling off, you know, some things or whatever they know they don't really use anymore, or even if it's something like a side hustle, you know, whether it be driving for ride sharing, or whether it be, you know, if you have a talent on something, you know, selling a course or something like that, you know, doing whatever it takes to be able to continue to build some level of money to come in so you can take care of those debts on the back end. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that I like that idea. What do you think about, well, first of all, do you recommend any specific type of things other than what you mentioned earlier about, you know, just selling off like old things or whatever? Do you have anything else that you recommend, or is that something that you can even recommend to people that they could try to do to accumulate some other type of monies?
Yeah, well, and everyone has a certain set of skills that is unique to them, and they could probably take those skills and monetize them in a way, whether that's having stuff sold on Etsy, or maybe having stuff sold on eBay and other things as well. And so you can, whatever skills you have, you can use those to try to find a way to monetize them if you wish to do that. And obviously ride sharing is one way to do it. Or maybe if you have an old job that you like to do, like working in a restaurant or a bar, you could do that too. You know, we have so many different options out there in terms of jobs, and especially now with the internet being the way it is, there's a lot of online jobs as well. And actually, one way that my wife and I were able to pay off our debt was I would find contests online for like 4K movies or Blu-rays, and they were usually ones that I didn't care to see, or maybe I had seen and I was like, okay, it's fine. And if I won it, it would get sent to me free of charge, and then I would put it up on eBay and, you know, get the money from that. So I essentially didn't really pay for anything. Sometimes if I put it up there for free shipping, I'd have to pay for the shipping. If I had the buyer pay for the shipping, they would buy for the shipping as well. So in a sense, I didn't really pay a whole lot or anything at all to get money in that way. And granted, that's, you know, 15, 20 bucks, depending on what it is, sometimes 30 bucks, but you can look around and see, okay, what can I sell, and just what can I get to put towards my debt?
Right, right. And, you know, and another thing about that too is that it doesn't have to be long term, because remember, you, mm-hmm. you have a plan. I mean, if the plan is to be able to do this, then, you know, you just work the plan. You don't have to do this long term. And I think a lot of times that's what people kind of get. They get kind of sidetracked with, you know, with the idea of that is having to be, I'm having to do this for a long time, or that I'm having to do it at all. Like, even if it's working at a convenience store, whatever it is to get some level of money coming in, because the ultimate goal is to pay off your debt. So, as I said before, you don't have to do this long term. You know, have a plan, like, you know, focus it out on how much you want to do it, how long you want to do it for, and then you build and then you work that particular plan, right?
Yeah, and having debt creates fear, and that's what keeps people from committing to a plan of some kind that works for them. And that's when they will hang on to that debt for years, you know, sometimes decades, depending on what it is. Like, I held on to student loans for 12 years after I graduated from college. And a lot of that was just because I put it on pause, and then I was not working, and then I went back to school. And then, so I just had it on pause for the longest time, and I didn't take it on until after I had life happen to me. And that's when I was like, okay, I need to get rid of this, because I shouldn't be hanging on to it for 10 years. And I did, unfortunately. Right. But having the debt, like accumulating the debt, when you initially accumulate debt, there's no fear attached to it. But then when you hang on to it and realize you have to pay it back, that's when the fear comes into play, because you look and see, okay, I've got this amount and I can make, you know, the $300 payment a month. But then we keep on accumulating more with, especially buy now, pay later, and applying that to all the different things that are out there. That terminology is new, but the method itself is as old as credit cards, maybe, and where you just, you know, buy now, pay later, and those keep on stacking. No matter how small they are, the more you stack on them, the bigger your debt gets. And that's when more fear creeps in, because now you realize, I don't think I can pay all this back. But you can, once you just sit down and plan it all out and talk to someone that can help you out, talk to someone that has been down that road.
Right. Right. So what do you say to those people who have credit cards and things like that and say, well, credit is good, or I'm sorry, having a healthy debt is what they call it. You know, what do you say to those people who have, like, you know, a few credit cards or whatever and say, well, as long as I pay them off at the middle, at the beginning of the year, or at before the cycle ends, before the billing cycle ends, then I'm good? Because I you mentioned earlier that you know that you guys only use really debit cards and cash or some stuff like that. So how do you navigate through that? And what do you say to people who actually say, no, we have to have credit cards?
Oh, well, I tell them, and this is a constant fight that I have with people online, especially, is you don't have to have credit cards. A credit score is essentially a way to tell you, to say that you love managing debt and you're able to manage debt. But at the same time, anything can happen when it comes to life. Like if you are doing the whole using a credit card, paying it off, and then reaping whatever rewards they are, which are pretty minimal if you kind of break down and look into it. But when you try to do that and just play that game, it's harder to maintain, especially because you may have the amount in your account at that point, mm-hmm. but then there can come a time where you use the credit card and then the next day you lose your job. And even though you may have used that money for whatever it was, whether it's groceries or gas, would you rather have that money gone the day you lost your job? Or would you want to wait and then have that bill come in and then pay it, and now you don't have a job? And it's, you know, we actually end up spending more when we use credit. Even when we use debit, we end up spending more. But that's because a lot of it is just like, I give you the card and I get my card back. If I were to give you a $20 bill, I only get $5 back, depending on what the purchase is. So when you, it's a behavioral thing. Like you get the behavior of like, I get my card back and then I just go in and I pay it off and I might get some rewards and just kind of add on to it. But the rewards and how much you spend and adding it up over time is really, I don't think there's much of a benefit to it. I was actually looking at a thing because I know a lot of people that are huge fans of a certain store where they have like an executive membership. And then that executive membership offers 3% cash back and, you know, this other thing. If you spend $3,250 roughly and you get 3% back, I think it was like 3% back, it's about $65 back. And that is over time. Or it could be if you spend $3,000 at one time and get $65 back. Now, the thing is with a lot of credit cards, a lot of people may not spend $3,000 at one time on a credit card. And that's, you know, I understand that. But if they do it over time, they may think that they're winning because they're getting the cash back. But I don't think a lot of people would make that payment if they realize they only got $65 back on that one transaction.
Right. Right. And that is how these credit card companies oftentimes try and get you, right? By giving you these incentives. You got to pay $6,000 or spend $6,000 in order to get 100,000 points, which only equates to, you know, maybe $1,000 or whatever. So you're literally having to spend X amount of dollars just to get X amount of points back. And it's, you're right. A lot of times it doesn't really add up. I mean, for the most part, none of it really adds up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, okay. I have a scenario for you. Because I was telling one of my friends that I was going to be talking with you, and she said, ooh, ask him this question, because she's getting a bonus. She's getting a bonus roughly around $10,000, a yearly bonus. She has about $8,000 in credit card debt. She doesn't really want to spend the entire $8,000 on that because she'll only be left with $2,000 in her savings. So what would you recommend in a scenario like that?
So just the way that it sounds, it almost sounds like she has no savings at all.
Yeah.
And
like $500 in savings.
Okay. Well, I mean, she's halfway to what would be the baby starter emergency fund, but she, so I, like, I understand the pain because, you know, you want to have that money saved up for whatever it is, but you also have to make sure that you know what you're saving up for. And if you're getting $10,000, but you have a $8,000 debt, or say even like there's only an $8,000 bonus and she has $8,000 of debt, that bonus is essentially a wash. Mm-hmm. Like you don't have a bonus because you have debt. You can't save that bonus for anything because you have to get rid of that debt. And, you know, I get it. Like I said, with my wife, making a big payment towards the debt like that was really hard for her emotionally. You know, it's a painful thing to just like, it's all gone.
Right.
You know, we worked so hard to save up this money and now it's all gone. We worked so hard when like everyone gave us so much money for our wedding and now it's all gone. Or in your friend's scenario, I worked really hard. I got this great bonus, but now it's gone. And that's what happens when we hang on to our debt and just accumulate debt. You know, and she may be in a situation where it's like, okay, this money's gone, but how can I get it back? Mm-hmm. Like, how can I get back what I just got rid of because I was paying off my debt? And she can easily do that by, you know, making sure that she has a budget and making sure that she's able to save up back to what it was before. And she could do that in 3 months or 6 months or however long it is, depending on what her situation is.
Okay. Okay. I'll be sure. Well, she listens to the podcast, so I'll definitely be sure to let her know that also to listen to it, because yeah, you're right. I think it's very challenging to be able to see all of that money in your bank account and the next thing you know, it's all gone. But as you said before, when you think about a greater purpose, when you think about the bigger purpose, if you lose your job,
yeah,
you have to deal with all of the debt from credit cards, from loans, from everything else or whatever, on top of trying to figure out how to live your life, versus if you didn't mm-hmm. have any of that debt at all and all you had to do is figure out how to live your life, then it would be a lot less stressful for you. So I get that. I get that.
Yeah. And I was actually going to add to this, because going back to the whole paying off the credit cards each month, when you look at the stats of it, a lot of people actually don't pay off their credit cards and those balances carry over. And if you think of all the rewards that you're getting, a lot of that comes from the people that carry those balances. So mm-hmm. whether they're, you know, the airline miles or the free points or the cash back, whatever it is, a lot of that is because people carry balances. The Federal Reserve says that 78%, almost 80% of people don't pay off their balances each month. And that's where a lot of those points come in. And that's even also contributing to a lot of the prices that go on in the market or and in anywhere else. A lot of that is because it's tied to the credit card system. If stores have to use credit cards, or a lot of people use credit cards, they end up charging you more because they have to pay the credit card company back like a 3% transaction fee or whatever it is. And so in the end, it's costing you more when you are using a credit card, not just, you know, purchasing things, but also when you look at the store items, you see how much it is. And if we actually just use cash or debit, it may be a little bit cheaper. And even in restaurants, if you go to a restaurant, whether it's a mom and pop shop or even maybe like your big chain store, they will say on the receipt, we charge 3% more for credit versus cash.
Right. Because they get charged a lot of times with, you know, with the credit card companies and whatnot, or with the merchant mm-hmm. fees and whatnot. Oh, such a great conversation, man. We can talk for hours about this because I am so fascinated by just finances and stuff, because I've been on a journey. Well, I was on a journey some years ago of trying to clean up my debt and try to clean up everything. And we were able to finally get to a position where I was feeling comfortable enough to be able to get a credit card or two. And so, but I know with a lot of people now, as we said in the very beginning of the episode, they're not in that position, right? So how do you recommend someone starts, whether it be creating a spending plan, whether it be just having a conversation about budgeting? What do you recommend people do to just start the process?
Well, I think you just said it, just start. I think a lot of it just has to be, you have to take a day to yourself and dedicate, what do I need to do? And you may not understand like how budgeting works, and that's totally okay. When I started doing this, I was like, I have no idea how to budget. I don't even have a budget. How do I budget? You know, I was super confused. Mm-hmm. And I did all this on my own, and I kind of wish I hadn't. I kind of wish I had someone else in my corner. Now, I had some people that were cheering me on and were rooting for me to pay it off, but they weren't really ones who would give the advice that's needed for me to keep pressing on. And I love every single person that has helped me along the way. I'm not saying that I don't, but it was just something where I needed someone like a coach to kind of give me that little extra push and say, this is what is actually probably the best option for you based on what you are telling me. And, you know, based on what you're telling me, I would take this route. I actually had someone who, they're going through a situation right now where they have collections, and the collections amount isn't that much. You know, just from where I stand, it's not a lot, but to them it's a lot. Mm-hmm. And it's like $500, but they were like, okay, well, I'm getting this much in taxes and I'm getting this, I'm, you know, going to pay off my collections with this, which is awesome that they think that, but I also want to start this. Yeah. I don't know. And they want to start their own business, but I don't know how it's going to do when I start. I'm like, well, you might want to stop and think, like, even though it's something you're passionate about, is it the right time? And that's the other thing too, because a lot of us will make these decisions when it's not the right time. And I totally get it, because I was making the same decisions when it wasn't the right time. I was going through, before I became a financial coach, I was a freelance journalist, and I was making decisions on, like, I want to go and do this convention and cover this convention. And even though I get in for free, I have to pay for a hotel. I have to pay for this. And at the time, I didn't have the money, because freelance writers don't get paid a lot, depending on who you work for.
Right, right, right. And but you stood your ground whenever you made the decision to say, you know what, let me get this thing together. Let me get all of my finances in order, and let me figure it out. And like you said, just start, right?
So yeah.
this is such a needed conversation. People just don't even realize how needed this is. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. This is good.
Thank you.
Is needed. All right. So I got one more question. Two more questions to ask you. One,
all right.
There is a part of the show where we always ask people what grinds their gears, you know, what gets them aggravated, agitated, frustrated, whatever. So for you, David, what grinds your gears right now?
I mean, I try not to let things get to me, especially being in where I am. And I have a lot of people that will come after me and try to dispute my claims and everything.
Yeah.
I think the whole idea of good debt versus bad debt is pretty silly. I don't let it grind my gears per se, but I think it's silly that we have this theory that there is good debt out there. I know it's kind of been professed for a while through some really well-known people like Robert Kiyosaki and mm-hmm. I think even J.L. Collins, but it's something where it's just debt. And there are people that will say it's manageable debt, but again, it is just debt. You are carrying debt, and something could happen and you could lose everything that you had. You know, even if it's a, you know, a lease for a place that you are renting out, or a lease for a car, or a lease for whatever, you are essentially not owning a lot of things if you just carry the debt with you each time. And the whole thing with right now, some mortgage rates, when COVID happened, mortgage rates were down in like the 2% range, and people were snatching up like crazy because mortgage right. rates were good. And I get that. But there's this mentality of, oh, I'm going to pay the minimum on my mortgage, but then invest that extra percent into the market. And, you know, I know people want to get ahead and invest more in the market. But back in October, there was a 20% spike in foreclosures. Now, granted, they didn't say what the percentage rate on those houses were, but again, the percentage rate doesn't matter because it's debt. And so I want you guys to invest in the market while you're paying off your debt, and even if it's like just the mortgage itself. But we get confused on, like, you know, we do this and then we do this and then we do this and then we add more here. And it becomes really frustrating over time. And so if we kind of just take things slowly at a time, yes, we need to invest in the market. Yes, we need to invest 15%, as the Ramsey Solution team will say, but we also need to pay off the house early, so that way we can invest more in the market and, you know, not pay as much on our mortgage over time. Because if you hold on to the mortgage for the 30-year, the 15-year, however long it is, you end up paying a lot more.
Yeah.
And everything you put into the market, in terms of returns, it's not really worth it when you look at it and you kind of break the math down. And I'm not someone who is like a big math person. I hated math in high school. I think the highest I went was algebra one. And then when I went to college, it was the equivalent to algebra two.
Right.
And that was it. I didn't do calculus. I didn't do trig. I didn't do any of that high tech math stuff. I was just the very basics. And I was like, I don't like math. And now I talk about the basic stuff of math, and you don't even have to be a math nerd. It's just very simple stuff, but it's funny because like I hated math and now I kind of teach it in a way.
You do. You really do. Because again, I mean, it's, you know, it's, as you said before, like you're teaching something. I mean, I honestly think it's more than math. I mean, although I know the core of it is mathematics and stuff like that, but you're teaching life, or, you know, lifestyle, mm-hmm. and you're teaching people how to be able to live comfortably. Yeah. Like Dave says, you know, mm-hmm. What does he always say? You do what you can now. No, you live like no one else now, so you can eventually live like no one else later, or something like that, he says.
Yep. Yeah, it's something along those lines. And that's the thing, too, because everything, even it's not really a math problem, it's a behavior problem.
Yeah.
And once I realized like what my behavior was, and I was impulsive. You know, I was buying a lot of stuff just because I could. But at the same time, I didn't pay off my debts, and I was just putting my student loans on pause, putting everything else on pause, or paying the minimums on what I needed to pay, which was like the credit cards or the car loan. And so once I realized like, okay, I need to change my behavior. Maybe I don't need all this stuff. Maybe I don't need to keep buying stuff that I don't necessarily need to have. And maybe my grocery bill can actually be less than what it is, and I don't let food go to waste. And I think that the thing with that as well, like the grocery bill is the biggest budget buster for a lot of people. I know it is for me. If you look in the pantry of your kitchen, you will probably see a lot of stuff that has been long expired. I know I did recently. I saw stuff from years ago. I'm like, I need to clean this out more often, and I probably need to not spend as much on stuff that goes in the pantry.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's funny you say that, David, because just yesterday, my wife and I were going through our pantry because we were looking for some rice, and a specific type of rice. And so we started looking at some of the things in our pantry, and we were like, wait, hold on. This expired 2 years ago. So we ended up throwing away, I would say, maybe 7 boxes of just stuff that we just, like some stuff that expired last year, some stuff we had since 2022. That it had expired then. And I'm like, this is completely wasteful spending. Like, we obviously at the moment we figured we may have needed it, but as you realize, you're right. Like, you sometimes you do have to take inventory of the things that you actually purchase. And with doing, you know, eliminating your debt or whatever, it will begin to change your mindset and have you thinking, well, you know what? Let me not spend as much, because you're right. We need to monitor what we spend or whatever. And then you never know, before you know it, you'll realize that, wait, hold on, we actually do spend a lot on frivolous stuff, on stuff that we thought we needed in the moment, you know?
So, yeah. Well, I'm not saying that like when you go through the pantry and realize how much you're spending on, like everything's gonna be perfect, but you'll realize how much you are spending and how less you need to spend on when you do things like examine how much you have in the freezer, how much you have in the pantry, and just how much you have in the house that you haven't touched in years. And no budget is going to be perfect per se. There are going to be times where you'll go over, and there'll be times where you maybe don't spend as much. Totally okay. But as long as you are more in control of how you are spending, that is where the concept of winning with money goes. That is where you are able to see, I can actually get ahead of a good majority of people. And then hopefully I can help people that were once in my situation and help them get them to the point that they need to be, whether they get ahead of me or maybe get on my same level in terms of saving and spending.
Right. Or like you say, get close to where you are, or even achieve what you've been able to achieve. So this is fascinating conversation. I tell you, we can talk all day, man. But before I let you go though, I do have one more question to ask. Anything that you would recommend to the audience, whether it be a book, a movie, a TV show, a podcast, anything, what would it be? What would you recommend to the audience, and why?
Well, I think what I would recommend is the book that helped me start my financial journey, and that would be The Total Money Makeover by Dave Ramsey, but also just The Ramsey Show. Now, they kind of changed over the years since I first started listening to it. When I listened to it, it was The Dave Ramsey Show, but now they've kind of changed it to where he has different co-hosts on, and they kind of focus more on not just money, but also behavior and career and other things like that. So, but I would recommend those for starting points, because that is how I got started on my journey. And that they are inspirational. You hear the stories of people that are maybe in your situation and how they overcame it. Listening to some of those screams, the debt-free screams that they have, where people go through, they lost their spouse, their, you know, significant others fighting cancer, they have all this other things going on, they maybe lost a house in a fire or something like that, and how they overcame that, that gives you hope. That lets you know that your situation is not unique, and that your situation is not easy to overcome, but it can be overcome.
Yeah, and you're right. It is extremely inspiring to hear all of these people, you know, who had $15,000, $50,000, $80,000, $200,000 in debt, who was able to clear it away using, you know, some of the methods that Dave talks about. Yeah, I agree with that 100%. I think everyone should read that book, The Total Money Makeover. It was a really good book. Very good book.
So, I agree.
Thank you, David, so much for jumping on and just kind of talking money with me. We definitely have to have you back on again, because this is only scratching the surface of the amount of stuff that that people want to know about. Again, finances is one of the leading causes of many, many ailments and many, many failures, like divorce, you know, sickness, stress, all those things, you know, having lack of resources and lack of finances. So thank you again, and I appreciate it. So where can everyone find you?
So my website is wongbergfinancialcoaching.com. It's WANGBERG, financialcoaching.com. And then my social media accounts, everything is at financecoachdw.
Okay, thank you. And it'll all be posted on the show notes. I also, with your permission, I would love to also post the news article that you had on the New York Post, because I did read that one as well. I'm going to put that in the bottom of the show notes too, because it was actually very, very insightful as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was a huge surprise. Like, I knew I was going to be featured on a news wire, but I didn't know it would go that route. And so that was a huge wake-up call to me when I was like, oh, I made national news all of a sudden, you know? Right.
Exactly. Look, everybody likes to wake up and you know, on the positive side of the news cycle versus the negative side. So,
yeah,
it's good stuff. So thank you again, David. I appreciate it.
All right. Likewise. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. So until the next time, y'all, this is Eric with EC Convos, and I will see you on the flip side. Peace.